At one time, I belonged to an organization called the Second Mile Society. The society was made up of a few hundred church leaders and theologians who were interested in faith-based ideas and projects that went beyond the expected norm. The society shared and published ideas, conducted occasional seminars, and sponsored an annual lecture in which we heard directly from some of our favorite, at that time, outside-the-box thinkers, persons like Tom Harper, Jean Vanier, and Margaret Avison. Now, there are lots of groups that use the Second Mile label. Just a few blocks south of here on College Street is the headquarters of the Second Mile Club, which, in its own words, is an organization serving seniors, disabled adults, and caregivers in Toronto since 1937. The Faculty of Applied Science and Engineering at the University of Toronto has a Second Mile Engineering Award. The write-up about the award explains that the recipient will be selected on the basis of 30% for academic ability, 30% for athletic and extracurricular, that is, second mile activities, 30% for an essay about going the second mile, and 10% for personal attributes. In the transmission of the idea of the second mile from the Bible into our contemporary culture, the essence of it seems to have been retained. Going the second mile has to do with our engagement in that which lies beyond the expected norm, beyond the call of duty, beyond the everyday routines of our lives. And there is also the implication that in going the second mile, something essential and exciting is to be found. In that engineering award of the U of T, more than half of the assessment for eligibility is based on extracurricular criteria, those second mile aspects of the character of a well-rounded engineer. Now, we can say that the idea of finding fulfillment in going the second mile is a thoroughly Christian idea. It comes straight from the teachings of Jesus, as we heard today in our gospel reading. If anyone forces you to go 1 mile, go also the second mile. Now, I said a moment ago that I think the essential meaning of going the second mile has been carried forward from the Bible. However, if we had started with the biblical account, we might not immediately have seen the positive aspects of the second mile idea. In the Bible, it all seems pretty grim. Some of you were no doubt groaning again today when, after the gospel reading, we maintained that herein is good news. What good news could there possibly be in not resisting the evildoer, turning the other cheek, letting a litigator take an extra settlement, putting in a second mile of forced labor after finishing the obligation of a first? Now, all of these examples come from the real-life experiences of oppressed people living under Roman rule in the time of Jesus. A lot of abuse was perpetrated by Roman bureaucrats and soldiers on the peasants living in poverty throughout the empire. The peasants got slapped around quite regularly. And it's hard to believe that Jesus condoned such abuse, let alone encouraged the victims to ask for more. At least, personally, I certainly don't believe that. It's much more likely that the turning of the other cheek was meant as an act of defiance, a way of saying to the abuser, strike me if you will, but you have no real power over me. same time, of course, we need to be extremely careful with such a teaching. This must never, never be allowed to encourage, excuse, or condone abuse. And I'd like to see a disclaimer put on this teaching for those who could end up getting hurt. Something like, kids, don't try this at home. The example of litigation with a coat as collateral provides a similar opportunity for a show of defiance. Peasants without any collateral would give the clothes off their backs in exchange for legal or administrative services. Crooked bureaucrats would take advantage of their vulnerability and take more than what was required. Handing over an even larger amount then as an act of defiance would be a way of throwing this injustice back into the face of the oppressor. Again, with the message that you don't really have any real power over me. And drawing extra attention in this way to the abuse might also have exposed the oppressor. Even the bureaucrats and soldiers had to live by certain regulations, and there was a limit to what they could get away with. Now, of these examples discussed by Jesus, going the second mile presents the most obvious possibility as an act of defiance. Everyone living under the rule of Rome was subject to the practice of angaria, in which civilians could be forced to carry soldiers' equipment for the distance of 1 Roman mile. Now, this was quite an onerous task because a soldier's pack could weigh 100 pounds or more. The angaria was then a sort of forced labor, a tax on the population which enabled the military to travel around the empire a bit more readily. In this case, the obligation is very clear. It's to go 1 mile, 1,000 paces, 2,000 ordinary steps. You could count them off. It would not be so easy for the soldier to force me or to trick me into a second mile. So the second mile could very well be an act of defiance undertaken at my own volition as an exercise of my own power thrown in the face of the abuser. Now, we've heard a lot of talk in Christian circles about a gentle Jesus, meek and mild, one who almost enjoys suffering and willingly dies on the cross in trust and obedience to some inexplicable divine will. We've also heard talk about turning the other cheek and walking the second mile as a pious exercise in Christian obedience, which will somehow earn the faithful Christians their brownie points in the sweet by and by. I don't buy any of that. And I think that if we read the Gospels carefully, we see the Jesus that we are seeing today. A visionary, defiant prophet who invites us into a way of life that resonates with the very best of our innate humanity. We sometimes miss the fact that life in the way of Christ is exciting and that it can be a lot of fun. And the talk today of turning the other cheek and going the second mile doesn't seem at first to be a recipe for having a good time. Nevertheless, happiness and the joy of living are fundamental to the teaching of Jesus, as indicated clearly in the Beatitudes. Blessed are you when you follow these teachings means essentially following these will make you happy. In today's reading, we get a hint of this, although it's largely lost in translation. This hint comes when Jesus ends our section of sayings with, "Be perfect, therefore, as God in heaven is perfect." Now, the biblical Greek word translated here as perfect has a much broader meaning, which includes wholeness, maturity, fullness, completeness. there would be something incomplete about just working to rule, never stepping out beyond the call of duty, never going that second mile. There would be something immature about simply acquiescing to oppression and abuse, and ultimately stepping out in faithful defiance against the oppressor also brings a profound measure of vitality and even joy. Although it is fraught with the risk of danger, even the threat of death, this faithful defiance is, paradoxically, the key to abundant life. In fact, this is the core message of the Christian gospel, as represented in the crucifixion and resurrection of Jesus. But we won't go there just now. That's a topic for Lent and Easter, a little ways down the road. For the moment, let's simply affirm that there is life to be found in faithful defiance and consider some examples. A first set of examples is surely to be found in black history, particularly in North America. It took a tremendous amount of defiance over and over again to challenge racism and to overcome slavery. We have, of course, the well-known stories of Rosa Parks and Martin Luther King Jr., but there are countless other stories that can be told. And our world is so much more beautiful, so much more just, with these stories as part of our history. It's wonderful to have a black president in the United States. It's been wonderful to have a black governor general in Canada and black lieutenant governor in Ontario and Nova Scotia. And there would be without, and where would we be? Where would we be without the rich contributions to our cultural life that have come from the likes of Oscar Peterson, Afua Cooper, Pinball Clemens, anyone? Misha Brugger-Gossman, to name just a few. Our life is more complete and more joyful because of the defiant insistence of our black sisters and brothers to claim their rightful place in our world. And may this history continue and blossom further as time goes on. And now I'd like to offer another example of faithful defiance that is relevant to us here at TSB today. And that defiance is summed up in a slogan that is being worn these days by Kairos supporters, and we have one of them here today, Riku, and I'm going to ask you to show people what your t-shirt says, and it's perhaps a little bit difficult to read, so I'm going to ask you just to come out in the aisle, if you will, see if people can read. Can people read your t-shirt? So what does the t-shirt say? Kairos is going away. Not. People on the other side would like to see it, maybe? And thanks to Julie Graham for the loan of that t-shirt. Julie isn't with us, but you know these t-shirts are being sold by Kairos, but they're not available. They've been sold out, and they're being sold out, and will continue to be sold out. I do have an order in for a few. Now, in November of 2009, Church supported global development. Thank you, Riku. Thanks very much. In November of 2009, the church-supported global development organization, Kairos, had its funding cut by the Federal Minister of International Cooperation. Most of you know this story, especially because it's made such big headlines in the Canadian media during this past week. In fact, it's become a political scandal. It's now evident that the civil servants at the Canadian International Development Agency had approved the funding, but that someone in the minister's office, likely under the direction of the prime minister's office, had added the word not to the official approval. At first, the minister suggested that the CETA officials were the ones who decided not to approve the Kairos application, but later she had to admit that it was a political decision. Now, the Prime Minister is still supporting the minister, suggesting that the right decision was made in order to make sure that public money is not spent unwisely. While Kairos has an impeccable record when it comes to spending their money responsibly and effectively, much of the money goes to global partners living in conditions where poverty and oppression are the order of the day. And they benefit greatly from the support that they get from Kairos and its global networks. The cut in funding was a slap in the face from our federal government. A defiant Kairos has gone back to the government to ask for explanations, but the slaps in the face keep coming. Supporters of our current federal government have joined the government to add insult to injury. And here are a few lines from an article by Peter Foster in the Financial Times this past week. And thanks very much to Don Middleton for passing this on to me. This is what Peter writes. Kairos is supported by a grab bag of terminally declining religious denominations searching desperately for current relevance by adopting the commandments of the Church of Greenpeace. It speaks for the weasel concepts of social justice and sustainable developments. That is, it believes that redistribution rather than investment is the answer to underdevelopment, that capitalism can be unsustainable. Imagine that. It saw in the 2008 financial crisis the opportunity for a new global order. Didn't I preach a sermon about that? Read Socialism Redux. Now, isn't that a nice summary of what the Canadian establishment apparently thinks of us? The Church of Greenpeace that speaks for the weasel concepts of social justice and sustainable development. Ouch! But to that, I will certainly turn another cheek. And hear this, Peter, and Jason, and Bev, and Stephen, Kairos is definitely not going away. Now, actually, I don't mind at all if we get labeled as the Church of Greenpeace. That's fine. But to identify social justice and sustainable development as weasel concepts is simply outrageous. And of course, we know very well that along with the labels of Greenpeace and Kairos and the United Church of Canada, our sense of identity lies much deeper than any of those. For we know that we are the church of the one who went the second mile for the whole of humanity with the desire to provide abundant life for everyone. For us who walk in the way set before us in the teachings of Jesus, social justice and sustainable development are sacred concepts and always will be. The pursuit of these and our entire pursuit of abundant life has brought a lot of joy to us. And it's brought a lot of joy to the partners that we work with here in Canada and around the globe. So we will remain defiant, and we'll certainly take on a second mile as we walk with determination and with joy in the way of Christ. Amen.